Before there were gods of storms and war and wisdom, there was the Earth Mother, perhaps the oldest god of them all. She was the literal ground beneath our feet, but also the source of life itself, the mother of all gods and mortals alike. But how old is she, and what happens when the Earth herself becomes part of a sacrifice that actually creates that world? Whenever you talk about the wonders of the Earth Mother, you are actually singing the praises of Mother Nature and perhaps of one of our oldest deities. She is sometimes known as the wife of the Sky Father, and she personifies the Earth itself and is probably one of the founding gods in the Proto-Indo-European pantheon, which started over 7,000 years ago, a pantheon whose influence eventually stretched from Scandinavia to northwest India. And such a god with such influence has some complexities that have built up around them over time, and such that, well, when you look at them, you realise that perhaps this is why we believe she is one of our oldest gods from a time before the Indo-Europeans, perhaps even before the farming revolution. And this will lead us to ask, how old is she? Where does she come from originally? And then how did the Proto-Indo-Europeans get to include her in their pantheon? And did this impact their existing beliefs? This video is her story, part of my series of videos talking about the gods within the Indo-European pantheon. So, well, if you want to know more, sit back and relax and, well, grab yourself a cup of tea, and welcome to Krekenfeld. The Earth Mother's name can be confidently reconstructed in the Proto-Indo-European language as Dekum Mita, which has a literal translation of Mother Earth, and she was often given the epithet Plethwi, which means the bald one, which referred to the vast expanse of the Earth one could see in the shape of the landscape. But what is Proto-Indo-European, and what is their language, and who are they, and why does it matter? Well, the Indo-Europeans are the cultures whose language has evolved from an original source language we call Proto-Indo-European. And this is a language that we hypothesize as being spoken around 7,000 years ago. And you will hear some people saying, how can we prove the Proto-Indo-European language existed and that it is a political device? And I would say, that is a fair question. And whilst we cannot tangibly prove the Proto-Indo-European language existed, not in the way we can prove the existence of a language that has been written down or is spoken today, what we can say is that the comparative linguistic method demonstrates with overwhelming consistency that the Indo-European languages share systematic correspondences in sound and core vocabulary, and the number and consistency of these correspondences cannot be explained purely through chance or from cultural borrowing, but can be if we hypothesise that there was a common ancestor language. And it is this language we call Proto-Indo-European, and it is an academic reconstruction of that language, not speculation. And there is no better explanation or model to, well, explain this relationships between the Indo-European languages. Now, assuming you are on board with Proto-Indo-European being this ancestor language, and so there must have been people who spoke the language to then allow it to spread and evolve, then these people who spoke this language were the Proto-Indo-Europeans, and their earliest cultures probably believed in many of the same gods and told the same stories, the same mythologies. Now, this culture spread over time, predominantly through the Yamnaya culture from around 6,000 years ago. And so the language spread, and so the stories of their gods spread with them. And over time, the changing landscape, which you see during migration, and this with the changing evolution in societies as civilization grows and expands, well, these stories and gods would have evolved and transformed, but the connections, their similarities remained. And much like how we can reconstruct the Proto-Indo-European language, we can also reconstruct their mythology and so some of their beliefs. And all this means that when we say we can confidently reconstruct the mother goddess in the Proto-Indo-European languages, Dega Meta, well, that is the reason why. Because we see this goddess in various forms around the Indo-European landscape, and we can look at a few of these Indo-European languages now and the cultures to show this. In the earliest Sanskrit texts of the Vedic tradition of northwest India, we find the goddess Prithivi Mata, which is translated to Mother Earth, and she is a central figure often paired with Dayu Pitta, the father sky, and that is a Vedic reflex of Deus Putta, the sky father. And we also see that there are Vedic hymns invoking these deities as protectors of the world. But we do occasionally see the Earth Mother paired with the Vedic storm deity Pradyanya instead of Dayas. In the Atharva Veda 12.1, a hymn to the earth, it describes Prithivi as receiving the rain of Pradyanya, a seed, likening their interaction to a sexual union of husband and wife. We also see in a similar vein the Vedic storm god Indra as a consort and protector of the earth. And in these Vedic sources, we read of how the rain from the god impregnates the earth, resulting in growth and the abundance of plants. Within the Greek pantheon, the earth is formally represented as Gaia, a primordial earth goddess, whose name may well have origins in agrarian culture, a culture older than the Indo-Europeans, and in which originates in the Near East. Now, Gaia reflects Indo-European traits in that she is said to be broad-bosomed and the mother of gods and men, although this does not exclusively happen with the Sky Father. As we read in Hesiod's Theogony, her initial consort is Uranus, possibly a name again of agrarian origin, and who represents the sky. But when she's done with him, she then creates children with Poseidon before moving on again. And all this is reflecting the really multiple layers of culture that have influenced Greek mythology. But despite this, we always see the earth as a mother figure. With the Greek pantheon, there is also the Indo-European named Sky Father, Zeus, who is her grandchild and who is married to Hera, who is another possible agrarian named deity. And the Indo-European Earth Mother's name is now taken by Zeus's sibling, Demeter. And she is the goddess of the grain and agriculture, properties which reflect the fertility of the earth. And Zeus is not done there. For anyone who knows of Zeus knows he liked to be fertile, probably not to be outdone by the Mother Earth. And we see he also copulates with Semele, a name thought to have evolved from another version of the earth goddess, Zemila. And so we see in multiple influences in Greek mythology the earth mother goddess of other cultures. And one must consider that this could be the result of the goddess being so well considered, as not to include her would be disrespectful to the earth itself. The Roman tradition, which often used Greek tradition as its foundation, isn't quite as complex as their Greek ancestors. They had the deity Terra Mater, or Tellus Mater, Mother Earth, and she was part of an agricultural and fertility sort of ritual, or many rituals, and she was often paired with Jupiter, the sky father, at these festivals, including the spring sowing festival, a full Dicidia, where a pregnant cow would be sacrificed to Tellus Mater to ensure that the earth remained fruitful. We also see in Roman phrases such as Mater Terra, Mother Earth, the epithet such as Alma Tellus, meaning bountiful earth in Latin. And this gives a perception that she is very much a maternal character. And from the Latin, we also see the word humus, a reflex of the Indo-European degum. And this means earth or soil. And that word is where we get the word human from. And so the very word for mortal man in Latin means children of the Earth. The other cultural group to look at linguistically when examining the Earth Mother are those that stem from the Proto-Germanic languages, the Old Norse and Germanic languages, where we see the Earth Mother in both their mythology and rituals. In Old Norse mythology, the goddess Ylf, which is cognate to the English Earth, is the mother of Thor, a deity who we consider a storm or probably more appropriately a sky god in this mythology, and who is fathered by Odin, the chief god, but who is not a sky god. And I talk about why Odin isn't a sky god in this video, which starts to look at the complexity and age of Old Norse mythology. Now, this mythology, like Greek, has gone through many changes, probably due to immigration into Scandinavia from other cultures, and the results are seen, for example, in Snorri Sturluson's Gylfaginning, which states that the Earth or Ylf was both the daughter and wife of Odin, which shows mythology evolving based on these influences. Now, there is also a historical document from the Roman historian Tacitus, which gives an account of an Earth Mother goddess amongst the Germanic tribes when he writes at the end of the 1st century CE. And in this, he says that the Ingvaeonic tribes worshipped Nerthus, whom he identifies as Terra Mater. Tacitus then goes on to describe a grove on an island where Nerthus's idol was kept on a cart. And during her festival, this cart was drawn by cows and taken around to bless the land. And during this time, weapons were laid aside and peace prevailed. This ritual of the chariot of Mother Earth being pervaded and the land enjoying peace and fertility is a rare eyewitness description of an Earth Mother ritual in practice. And archaeological finds, such as those of votive wagons and evidence of bog sacrifices, give us some consistency with Tacitus's account, suggesting that such rituals were performed in the Iron Age and perhaps even earlier. And here in England, we find the Earth Mother is almost certainly echoed in the phrase Urke, Urke, Earthen, Mordor, which is an invocation of the Earth Mother in an Old English charm for fertility. The charm asks for the earth to be fruitful, Helvis du vold fira Mordor, meaning hail to the earth, mother of men. And so it is directly stating that earth is the mother figure and the mother figure of men, reaffirming the mythological trope of humans coming from the earth. Now, within other Indo-European cultures, references to the Earth Mother are much rarer, but that's purely due to the lack of written sources. We know the Gauls, what we would consider a Celtic culture at this time, worshipped a goddess Litavis, whose name is cognate with the Proto-Indo-European word for broad, and so suggests she was an earth goddess. And we have found in some Gaelic Roman inscriptions, Litavis is voked alongside Mars, such as Marge Cicolios et Litavis, suggesting a pairing of a local war and sky god with an earth goddess. And in Baltic, we see Slavs have an earth goddess, Zemia or Matika, and Pole spoke of Matka Zemia, a name that can be linked to Semele from Roman mythology, the mother of Dionysus, who was at one point a partner of Zeus. And where we see the storm god take over the chief god role and the sky god role in the pantheons, we find that Baltic traditions have their storm god Perkinus, and Perkinus is said to be unlocking the earth with the first rain of spring, which is a metaphor for the, well, fertilization between these two deities, an analog to the Indo-European sky father fertilizing the earth mother, much like we see in Vedic. And this mythology eventually finds a Christian guise when Perkinus' role is shifted to St. George, who opens the earth in spring in Baltic folklore. And this really emphasizes the importance and sort of the ingrained myths in society of Mother Earth, you know, amongst all these cultures. Having confidence in the reconstruction of the Indo-European names for the Earth Mother is one aspect to understanding her. But how did she come to be? And this is an incredibly significant question, because the role of Mother Nature seems to be one that should have always been there. Humans see the world and understand fertility and the seasons, and so is she one of our oldest gods? And so let's look into this to see if we can unravel the origins of the Earth Mother. Now, the simplest place to start is with the Indo-European myth of creation, which is an academic construction of the myth, and which people like Bruce Lincoln and David Anthony have helped make popular, and which I have taken and expanded further. I have a video of this myth if you want to hear it. And this says that at the start of time, there were two primordial beings, twins, Manu and Yimmo, and Manu sacrifices Yimmo to create material to build the cosmos. Now, the story goes that from the body of the sacrificed twin, the world was made, and to this end we have a list of homologies, such as bones become rocks, blood becomes water, flesh becomes the soil. And this conclusion, the conclusion to this is that the Earth was literally made by Manu from Yimmo's body. And so therefore the Earth Mother was made by Manu from Yimmo's body. Therefore, we have a god that was being created by a primordial being from a primordial being, and we can see this isn't unique in Proto-Indo-European mythology, as we have both the sun and the moon being created from the primordial sacrifice's eyes. And the sun and the moon are considered deities in various Indo-European traditions. We also have Manu creating humans from the body of Yimmo. Different parts of the body for different types of humans, priests, warriors and farmers. And then to tie the macrocosmic and the microcosmic views together, we have the cycle of birth and death and ritual death through sacrifice to give back to the earth. The birth of humans as using pieces of the earth to create the body continues the cosmic cycle of life. And this sounds very compatible with a Mother Earth, an Earth whose own resources are used to create humans that then die to go back to put resources back into the Earth. We have this, her resources are used to create humans, which is how we see the Earth Mother. What breaks this somewhat is that the Earth Mother is a personified deity. She is not the planet Earth. The personified Earth Mother is often seen with the Sky Father, and that's a well-supported Indo-European mythology, a dyad, if you will. And this dyad is seen in many traditions, and this pairing is often considered sacred. And then there are often the parents or grandparents of most of the other gods in the Indo-European pantheons. Now, I have had a few questions about her connection with water from a couple of my patrons, but such a connection is really ignoring her primary Proto-Indo-European reconstruction as Earth Mother, as well as the epithet of the Broad One. Yes, the Earth Mother has links to fertility and so water. We see that with the storm god raining on her as part of an overall cycle of life, part of a whole. But water is not a specific function of the Earth Mother. And then this would have allow her to have a connection with moisture, a connection where water and earth meet. But this, I feel, is probably more of an agrarian influence rather than Proto-Indo-European, as we mustn't forget that most Indo-European cultures combined in various degrees with the existing agricultural farmers and their mythology and rituals. And this can cause some debate amongst scholars over the actual meaning of names, as many that are suggested to mean rivers or flow are not without contention. And so all this implies that early Yamnaya culture, and with it the late Proto-Indo-European culture, both knew a cultic sky-earth dyad and a sacrificial cosmogenesis in which the earth was, at its most primitive, a derivative substance rather than a goddess, a deified or divine substance. So the question should be, how did the Indo-Europeans come to have this situation to allow these mythologies to exist in harmony? or are they mutually exclusive doctrines? Now, if we consider the various mythologies we initially see, how the dismemberment story explains how the cosmic order was established and periodically renewed in ritual sacrifice, well, later traditions evolve and merge and, well, hierarchize or compartmentalize the dyadic deities. And so in the Old Norse, we see the earth as a body through Ymir and earth as a goddess through Yul. And in the Vedic, we have the Deva Prithviva hymns and the Purusha Sukta. And in Greece, we see Gaia and Demeter alongside Semele and others. And so to answer this potential conundrum of how can the Earth Mother be a deity and also be the body of Yimmo, it can be because they are operating at different structural levels and so are not seen as, they're not seen as mutually exclusive doctrines. The dyad names represent the enduring polarity of the ordered world, while the dismemberment myth narrates how that order was first established and is ritually and continually renewed, and so varies over time. But even proving how these traditions can be in harmony, why do they both appear in Indo-European culture? It still doesn't make sense why both would exist. As if the culture started from nothing, you would only expect one of these to persist. But the fact is that the Proto-Indo-Europeans, well, didn't come out of nowhere. They were a combination of other cultures at the time and other cultures that may have had a primordial sacrifice or an earth mother. So where do these come from? Well, one way to understand this is to examine the Mythology and Folklore database, a database that has been created by myself with the support of my patrons and YouTube members. And so this is me thanking you all for, well, all of you who support me through my work, through either belonging to these platforms or even by liking and subscribing this video. It all helps me to get good quality academic material out there to you, available to anyone who watches YouTube and to all the students and other academics who use this database. And so if you're not familiar with the Mythology and Folklore database, it's a repository of hundreds of thousands of narratives, motifs and mythemes that can be searched and compared, and from which geographic dispersals can be displayed on a world map for these narratives. And using this database, if we compare the motifs of the Earth Mother, which are B2D, or pretty much anything B2, but B2D, and the primordial giant dismemberment, B43, and any of its sub-motifs, then the data is ambiguous and unclear. We see the Earth Mother in sub-Saharan Africa, suggesting she is old, but it lacks any occurrence in South America or Australia. But the primordial dismemberment is not seen in sub-Saharan Africa, but it is in South America, albeit not in significant numbers. But both stories are across the Indo-European landscape, but dismemberment has a higher proliferation in Asia, with Mother Earth being more common in North America. Now, this is a really mixed signal at a high level and will warrant computational comparative analysis to understand if they're, well, if they really do differ. But someone who has looked into this in some detail is Michael Witzel, who authored the book The Origin of the World's Oldest Mythologies, and who believes the dismemberment of a giant to create the Earth later is likely an older motif, with a dispersal suggesting that it was being told in Paleolithic hunter-gatherer mythology and would have been one of the early creation motifs alongside those which include primordial waters and the cosmic egg. Now, Witzel does argue comparatively that the giant dismemberment pattern reflects a deeper Paleolithic layer, while the Sky Father Earth Mother belongs to the Lazurian time frame with its more novel-like storyline that systemizes multiple earlier strands. This could stem from late Paleolithic and was probably part of the early Neolithic with the rise of the agrarian farming culture. But this historical comparative inference is not a proof and it is considered a controversial take by some in academia. In short, the primordial giant being sacrificed feels like an older story than a Mother Earth motif. But that is not certain, and certainly both were being told in Eurasia before the Proto-Indo-European language and cultures associated with it were formed. For me, probabilistically, I would say that these two mythologies certainly existed before the Proto-Indo-European language, and it would make sense if they came together in central Western Asia, possibly in the Lower Volga region, an area where it said a proportion of the people who contributed to the earliest Proto-Indo-European cultures came from, with the Proto-Indo-European homeland currently suggested to be somewhere between the Volga and the Dnipro rivers on the Pontic-Caspian steppe. The two motifs of the Earth goddess and the cosmogonic Earth element then coexisted in high-level idioms with distinct functions, and it was later that these traditions were merged, prioritised, or reinterpreted them under local theological needs and the influences of intercultural contacts from the second millennium BCE onwards. And this is where we see the clear examples in the Greek pantheon and Old Norse pantheon and Vedic pantheon, and the mythology that comes from these. In effect, what we are left with is a synthesis that lets both motifs coexist within Proto-Indo-European tradition, two registers, two functions. First we have a cosmogonic register, a ritualized approach with myth where a primordial being is sacrificed and its body maps onto the cosmos. This myth in effect encodes a ritual template of sacrifice, creates and restores order, and it links macrocosmic and microcosmic views of the cosmos together, and can also include the creation of social structure. The second register is that a deity reflects how life continues to flourish on Earth, something the archaeological record reflects with figurines of women often seemingly reflecting fertility. And this goes back far into the Paleolithic, suggesting that people, perhaps first personified a god then, and that personification of God of the Earth was a woman. And what we can say with confidence is that the Earth Mother stands really at the threshold of myth and memory, part goddess, part tangible ground we walk on, born from death, yet given life. She reminds us that we are quite literally the children of the Earth, and that every story of creation begins beneath our feet. I wanted to create an addendum to what I'd already said in this video about this possible Earth Mother. Now, our earliest creation stories have people coming from the ground, people coming out from the base of a tree or from under a rock, coming from the Earth. These people aren't created, they just appear. I think it was Bearskin who said it's a creation myth without creation. And so that could be the seed for the stories of the Earth Mother. The Earth is birthing humans. So it could be that our very earliest creation myths actually reflected the Earth Mother. And what we also see is that some of our earliest creation myths, maybe slightly later than this, where we actually see a creation aspect, such as the Earth Diver, where mud is used to create the world, we have this sort of material being used to create something, that is the seed of the primordial giant, the dismemberment effect, where the landscape is created from a being. And you can see in some ways that actually, if the Earth is giving birth to a human, then the Earth is a body. It is a metaphorical body. And so you could see that could be the source of the stories of a primordial giant being used as part of the Earth. But you can't just have that primordial giant being made into the Earth. Someone has to make it into Earth, which is why you have twins. It's all interesting and suggests that these myths could be actually their very origins could be far, far older still, almost as old as modern humans. Anyway, I just wanted to add that. It's an interesting thought. The Earth Mother is an incredibly archaic deity in whatever form you see her in, you know, whether that's personified or as Mother Nature. And yeah, with that, thank you for watching and listening. Thank you for your support. Please like and subscribe. And with that, I will speak to you all very soon. Please take care. Toodle-pip.